Next Chapter Podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The 500. The 500. J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing too new. Hundreds more to go. In need of a friend, the king of fleas for Angelo. Talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500. Talking the 500 until the end.
I'm just doing this for the next hour and a half. That's what the episode is this week. God damn, that is a ripping guitar sound. Did he steal it from Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top? Tweet me your thoughts. The song is Money for Nothing. It's by Dire Straits from the 1985 record Brothers in Arms. And it's number 352 out of 500 on the 500 with Josh Adam Myers. And hey, that's me. What do you see? I'll come in here, give you a podcast for free. That's right. It's a free podcast. You can help us. Join the Patreon. Please, dear God, I'm begging you, if you listen to this podcast, help us be financially independent so we can continue doing this podcast until May 31st, 2028. I want to keep doing it. We're going to keep doing it regardless, but there's a lot of great people that work on this show, and we want to pay them better than what we're paying them now. And I want to make some money because this takes a lot of time, man. We got Adam, we got Peter, we got Jeremiah who's in Hawaii. I don't even know what he does anymore because he's just at a luau 90% of the time. We got Emily, we have Melissa, we have Ben. God, but Adam's my scoodle. Adam's my new scoodle, everybody. I love him to death. If you join the Patreon, and also, guys, if you think there's things that we could give you in the Patreon, what do you want? Do you want me to do an AMA? You want me to do an ask me anything? Do you want it? What do you want? An extra episode of something? Like, you tell us what you want that'll get you to join the Patreon, and I will do it. Because I can't think of any other ideas. I don't want to do another podcast about music because this is good and this is great and this is, but it takes a lot of time. So if there's something that will get you to join the 500 Patreon, tweet at me, DM me, let me know, and we will do it as long as it's not like a video of me S-ing my own D. Should I leave that in? I'm going to leave it in. So guys, go to patreon.com/the500podcast for $5 or more a month. Man, you can help us be a part of the Fleece Army. I'll rake you. I'll rank you. And also smash that subscribe button. Smash it on YouTube because you get the videos every Thursday. Alrighty. All right. So what? Okay. Oh, let me tell you about some dates. September 22nd through the 25th, I will be at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas, doing the goddamn comedy jam. And literally, I am so excited about it. Like, you guys, woo, come to Austin, man. It's going to be our first festival back. Partying with everybody. We want to see you there. Jam, stand up, biggest comics alive. It's going to be the shit. Then we have, I'm going to see the Heartless Bastards at the Bowery on Thursday, September 30th. I can't wait. I just saw Soulfly. That ruled. I'm doing a show in Texas again on October 14th in the middle of nowhere. Check my website for tickets. I think it's in like Plano or something. Skankfest South will be there November 6th. I'll also be at Just for Laughs Escapes in Cancun November 3rd through the 7th. I will be at the Edmonton House of Comedy December 9th through the 12th. And I will be in Vancouver New Year's Eve weekend. It's going to be the shit. And you can see me almost every night at The Stand or at The Comedy Cellar here in New York City. And keep your eyes peeled for the goddamn Comedy Jam in New York and for the next one in Los Angeles because it's going to be dope. All right, let's talk about Dire Straits. I mean, what is there to say that hasn't already been said about Dire Straits? They rule. And I think a lot of it has to do with Money for Nothing in the music video. And that was my first introduction to the band. And what a good introduction, because it's such a great song. And as a little kid seeing it, it's very impressionable. And my guest today was very impressed by the band Dire Straits. The one and only Pablo Francisco. Pablo is an incredible stand-up comedian, tours all over the world. You might have seen his specials, Ouch, or They Put It Out There. He's been on Frank TV, Mad TV, and a great impressionist, great dude, and this was a fun one. Unfortunately, we had some audio problems after the fact, so we had to cut a lot of it because it was unusable. So we tried to salvage the episode as best as we can, and hopefully it's still enjoyable because this was fun. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms. If you're listening on Apple, leave us a 5-star rating and a review, please, dear God. If you can't join the Patreon, do that. Or if you can't do either of those, follow me at Josh Adam Myers on Instagram, Twitter. It's all social media at Josh Adam Myers. And go to joshadammyers.com for tickets to all my shows. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow the Facebook group run by Crazy Evan. And for all things 500, go to our website, the500podcast.com. Well, guys, nothing left to say but here we go with 352. Brother in Arms by Dire Straits. Here's the episode. What's up, Fleece Army? Before we get into this podcast, I want to take a second to tell you about our new sponsor, Keeps. Now, when you think of rock stars, the older ones, what do you think bothers them the most? What do you think they worry about the most? Ex-wives that are trying to steal their money? Bad record deals that they signed when they were teenagers and now they're losing millions of dollars every year? No. Hair loss. Because I've seen them. I've seen some rock stars that had full heads of hair when they were younger, and now it's fallen out, and they look like Telly Savalas. Well, I, myself, have experienced hair loss. Right when I saw that happening, I started using Keeps, and I am a huge, huge fan of this company. What I do is I do the pills, and I do the drops. And since I've started doing that, my hair hasn't been falling out as much, and my hair feels thicker. And more than 50 million men in the US suffer from male pattern baldness. And that is why I've been using Keeps, and I love it, and I've been using it for a while now. It's a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. They offer a super convenient virtual doctor's consultation, and the medication is delivered straight to your door every 3 months. And they got treatments that start as low as $10 a month. And the packaging is so discreet, no one will even know that you're getting clumpy clumps that are falling into the drain drain. And if you've tried other hair loss treatments without any success and think that this will be more of the same, check out the customer testimonials. Check out mine, man, because I'm telling you, I look great. I'm 41. I got a full head of hair, all because I noticed the signs that I was losing it and I stopped it. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to KEEPS.com/jam500 to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/jam500. Get your first month free. Once again, KEEPS.com/jam500. Now, let's get back to the pod.
Oh, I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm fine. Where are you guys at?
I'm in New York City. My producer and assistant, Adam. I don't even know where you are, Adam. Where are you?
Santa Rosa, California, just about an hour north of San Francisco.
Okay, well, really, I didn't know. Santa Rosa, never heard of that. But hey,
there's a part of wine country.
I think it's like brother. I think it's like a nice way of cleaning up. I live in Oakland. It's like you live in Oakland, dude. You
Santa Rosa.
Yeah, it's like him and E-40 and all these other dudes. I don't even know who else lives in Oakland besides. I don't even think Jose Canseco lives in Oakland anymore.
Does he? Jose Canseco, like, yeah, but he's got his Lamborghini probably stolen there by some brothers in Oakland. Yeah, safe over here. Come join the party.
Okay. Without further ado, huge introduction for dude. I was just at the Comedy Cellar the other night. I was going to give you this big introduction, and we mentioned I was recording this with you to some of the comics, and what? And they were like it was just immediately one of the funniest dudes they've ever seen live, and no one can do what you do. So, well, ladies and gentlemen,
thank you. Wow.
Pablo Francisco.
The Cellar. Thank you, man. The Cellar up in Vegas, you said?
Yeah, the Cellar in New York City, man.
What? Okay, I know the one in New York City, but I heard there's one in Vegas. Am I correct?
There's one at the Rio. Yeah.
Wow. What a fantastic little place that is, man. What I heard. But the one in New York is fantastic. I went there about 5 years ago for a showcase, and it was incredible because they had all the industry people going downstairs in the back. It was so much fun. It was like, miniaturized but big
tiny. Why I think it's great. That's why I think that place is so great, because like you'll go to a place like the Laugh Factory and it's massive and bright, and then you'll go to a place like Gotham in New York that is like wide but you know, very clean, and then the Cellar is just this little room of like 65 people packed in, which is funny because I'm very much like you on stage, just very high energy. And I remember the first time I did the Cellar, I was like a little nervous because I had just gotten past. I went up super high energy, and the crowd fucking hated me. Hated. Yeah, dude. First year comic. I fell right into first year comic. It was bad, bro.
Witchcraft.
It is witchcraft. Somebody possessed me, the ghost of some open micer that passed away 19 years ago, consumed my soul and made me do the most BS jokes. Like I started talking about Reaganomics. I was like, what am I doing?
Did you really?
Hilarious.
Reaganomics, Bill.
so let's dive into this, man, because we're here today to talk about Dire Straits, not Steely Dan, everybody. Not Steely Dan. That's my big mistake, that I constantly keep confusing these two bands, Steely Dan with Dire Straits. When we did the Steely Dan episode with Jeff Cohen, who played Chunk. Jeff. You know Jeff, right? Yeah, he played Chunk. He's a lawyer. Yeah. He's my lawyer, and he played Chunk in the Goonies. Yeah, he was the fat kid from the Goonies.
Yes, I remember speaking with that guy many times. He was my lawyer. He did a fantastic deal. He worked it out with this record company. He went in there, went boom, and did the little whatever, the Goonies kind of thing. I don't know what you call it, but he went in there and did a great job. So, anywho,
Anywho, but he's a huge Steely Dan fan, and I kept confusing these two bands, thinking that a lot of the songs that are on this record were in upcoming Steely Dan records. So now I was going to say, now that I've listened to this record, and now that I understand exactly who this band is, and we have a person on here that is a fan of Dire Straits.
Right.
Tell me the first time you heard Dire Straits.
Okay, I was that one song in it, been to the Good and everything. They were the downtown. It was the Kings of Sultan, right? And I heard this song. And back then, there was no videos, right? Back when I think it's 76. Yeah, I was 76. I was 9 years old. You know, on Mission Beach over there, and my dad took us to Mission Beach, and I remember hearing those songs. I was going, check out who are these guys? I didn't understand the song was so intricate. Really, I look back at it when music videos came out. That's when they started, everyone was jumping on that bandwagon of getting, you know, when MTV came out.
Yeah.
Back then, it ran from 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 10 o'clock at night. And that's when all these bands were coming out. Dire Straits already set with, you know, Money, you know, the Stones, right? They came out with the I Want My Endpoint. MTV came out in 85, the one with, what's the one that's So Far Away From Me, that song?
Yeah, that's on this record.
And that song, when we did that song with Sting, I want my MTV, right? I was doing major bonds at my friend Richard's house, right? 85. And they go, my parents go, hey, you guys want to go into, his parents did. You want to go to Monrovia, California? So we listened to that jam all the way up there, that whole album. And my dad goes, you know what? Who are these guys? And I go, it's the Dire Straits. And we saw the video of with MTV with Sting, and that song is that shit was so good that I was going, I go, God damn, I even bought it on cassette tape back then and just would jam it through my stereo that I bought at the Price Club.
Nice.
And Toshiba. And that thing just jammed out probably those songs and the other ones. But I look back at it and I see when they got Sting in it, I go, these guys are just, the intro to their music was fantastic. They knew how to do it. They put the bandanas with the really, really great band, I got to tell you. So I look back and I go, you know what? Quality band. And, you know, are they still rolling? Are they still rolling around? Dire Straits.
Adam, can you find out? I think I read that they might have disbanded.
Right.
Adam, find that out. Yeah. So how old are you at this time when you first heard this record?
Okay. Now look, I'm 50. I think I'm 52, but I read at third grade level right now. So
okay.
I was sophomore year back then, you know, kind of creepy, but at that year, that's when Richard Ramirez, that Night Stalker guy.
Yeah, the Night Stalker, dude. He's my favorite.
Yeah. I'm the Night Stalker. I'm Casey Kasem. And he's a Night Stalker.
We're doing the top 10 serial killer breakdown today on 92.3. Coming in at number 10 is Jeffrey Dahmer. He murdered and ate the penises of 6 of the guys he killed. Let's check out his greatest hits. And it's now, just it's just that woman in the courtroom like, I kill you! I kill you!
That's so hilarious. And he was the other, and he dressed up like a clown, and he put kids under his roof or under his fucking bed. Please welcome Owen.
What's the guy? John Wayne Gacy coming in at number four.
Down to number 2 and down to number 5. Yeah.
Wayne Gacy is back up to the number 1 spot, beating out Richard Ramirez because they found another body buried down the street. 34 years later.
And here she is with that one chick on the news. Okay, Mr. Ramirez, who has an AC/DC hat. We know that he wears sneakers. You know, I go, AC/DC threw it off the bridge, his AC/DC hat, so he wouldn't get caught. Please, will you welcome? So that came out.
Are you from California?
No, I'm from Tucson, Arizona. All the way to the Gulf, Philadelphia, Atlanta, LA, Northern California, where the girls are warm. Right.
So you didn't have to worry about Richard Ramirez.
Well, on our way to Monrovia, I go, wait, are we going to where the Night Stalker is? And I goes, yeah, my dad. I goes, yeah, I go, we're going towards California. And he goes, yeah, don't worry. Now check this out. We arrived there. I go, now we just found out that he's running around. They said they caught him, like a bunch of people were chasing him.
So yeah, they beat him up.
Right. And they go like this. So I go, all right. So did they catch him? Right. And they go, yes, they caught him, but they weren't giving out information. But his name is Richard Ramirez. Now, the guy I'm with was Richard, I can't say his name, Romero, right? So yeah. We get there, and back then I was selling martial art equipment, right? Now, the Dire Straits has been jamming, and we're listening to that song, and what else are the songs we're listening to? It was that, and it was another jam we jammed out. Oh, it was Rats.
Dude, what are you talking about? Round and Round?
They just came out with Invasion of Your Privacy, that thing. So we were listening to both of those guys, right? And we get stoned if my aunt finds out this, okay. Okay, she's going to find out today.
She's not listening.
Yeah, she's not popping. No, later on, dude. Well, she goes, so we were in Monrovia, California. She goes, and I had the Dire Straits cassette. I swear to God, with that little guitar on there, that was the cover of it. And what was the name of the album? We got Dire Straits. Anybody? Adam?
With that album, it's Brothers in Arms, the one we're talking Brothers about today.
So my dad made me make duplicates on it, on my Scott double cassette thing, right? So we're there, and we're jamming out to it. And it was the way it was recorded. I think it was done digitally. It was perfect on a cassette tape. It just blurred out great. And we're jamming out, and all of a sudden, my aunt goes, we're going to go out to dinner, and we're going to be gone for like 6 or 7 hours. So if you guys are out and about, you go through the garage, and you sneak in. So we're like, all right. And we're jamming out Round and Round. We put a compilation tape together. We're jamming out. And all of a sudden, we snuck in there. And all of a sudden, the cops start surrounding the house. So I go, hey, dude. I go, someone's getting busted, right? And next thing you know, I go into the bathroom. And I hear dogs go. He's like, what the fuck's going on? He goes, dude, they're coming after us. And I walked out there. I put the stuff underneath the thing. And I walked out. And I see my friend with a gun to him. He gets on his knees. And they go, what's your name? It was Richard Romero. And they went, what? Like just him? Get out, right? And I go, Richard, I walk out. And go, Pablo, come out. I come out in a Bruce Lee tracksuit, a black one that I was selling martial art equipment.
Yeah, too. I know. I just imagine you holding like four like Chinese stars and some nunchucks, maybe some katanas.
I had the tonfas. I had the Rockberry badass, lead bars in each nunchucku. So I come out and they go, get down on the ground, right? I get down on the ground. Richard, and they had this gun that was a barrel like this, right? And I go, what? And it was weird because when we were leaving to go to the park to play soccer, there was a guy looking all creepy looking in a Pinto, smoking a cigar. I go, what's this guy doing? Well, that guy, I guess, found out somehow he was hanging out in that neighborhood, comes in, busts down the doors, and the cops, they get us on the ground. I go, my parents are at a big dinner right now. They find out you pulled out guns. And I swear to God, there must have been 40 of them disappear. All right, you don't have to tell your parents. You don't got to say nothing. But can we go through your stuff and then pick up Chinese stars? This is illegal. This is illegal. I go, yeah, but I go, I don't sell that. I just have it here in the house. So anyhow, they take off and my dad goes like this to me. We tell them what happened. And my dad goes, they don't believe it. I go, this place was surrounded by cops about 3 hours ago. So that's my story. And down to number two, here's Richard Ramirez with Kill 'Em All by Metallica. But, right. But your case is better than mine. So there you go.
No, yours is fucking dope, dude.
Finally get it down. How funny. Here is Jeffrey Dahmer.
Awesome. Coming in at number 10.
So I was just talking with someone. You said Dire Straits was on the thing and then the Doors, right? We're talking, it was a combination play.
Well, no, we have. So, yeah, I think we probably asked you about the Doors to do the Doors a while back. But I don't know. Just something just didn't happen. And then this came out perfectly with Dire Straits because, you know, this is great to know that this record like hits you like right in high school. You know, because I remember like the first thing that really sticks out to me about the first time I heard this record, which the first time I actually listened to the record was now, but the first time I heard of Dire Straits was the music video. The music video is so iconic. It's so, you know, I mean, it's ahead of its time.
Right.
It's ahead of its time. I mean, they're using like computer animation.
That was a big thing.
Do you have it? Pull up the music video for a second. Let's take, because I also want to say that this came out in 1985 and this like blew people's minds.
It did.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
It's like, that is such horrible graphics. Like, I've seen stuff on like an Atari 6000 that actually had better graphics than that. I mean,
you really think?
I mean, for 1985, like, that's blowing people's minds. Like, that's just so crazy how we've evolved. And I mean, yes, it's been over 30 years. I understand that, Police Army. I understand that, you know, we get tech savvy, and even by like 5 years later, I mean, you know, they're making shit that's even more high tech. But I mean, how did you feel seeing that in 1985? Like, what were your first thoughts? Do you remember?
Well, okay. When I first saw it, I couldn't believe that first. I go, is this Sting talking about, I want my MTV? How are they integrating MTV with these guys? I didn't know that MTV was getting big. Everyone was like getting on that bandwagon, Stones. And all of them were making videos, right? And you look at these guys, at Dire Straits guys. And I'm going, okay. So I see the bandanas. I'm going, okay. And these guys kind of look back then like, you know, they've been on tour a lot. I didn't think, but when they're talking, you know, look at them yo-yos. That's the way they do it. They play their music on the MTV. Oh, look at that. And he's all faggot. That's the way I'm going, wait. You know, hitting on the drums like a chimpanzee. Oh, that ain't working. That's the way you do it. I was like, going, and George Michael just came out with Wham, was just transitioning to get, was leaving.
Wham, and was leaving going, Wham. So he was going solo. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going solo. But back then, you see the guy, he's jumping, they do like a spiff of him, and they show like the videos, and those two guys are going like this. Like, wait, I go, because back then, and when I tried to record it on, like, on, I had Friday Night Videos back then, right? Right? It was Friday Night Videos. It was a video place. I didn't have MTV back then, just Friday Night Videos. My parents didn't want to,
pay too much expensive. Money.
It doesn't. Yeah. You're only getting e-entertainment, and you're getting HBO, and that's it. I go, all right. So, guess who sold us? Guess who sold my neighbor cable? You're not gonna believe this. Okay, we're in the parking lot. I go, Dad, you're gonna get cable. He goes, you know what? I'm gonna get it. I saved money. I bought a Mongoose bike. I was an actor back then, so I was making a little bit of money coming in. I go, here comes the cable guy going up the street. Here he comes. We're all looking at him, right? He comes up to my parents' house. He goes, hello, my dad's just getting out of his car. He goes, hello, I go, how are you doing? I go, yeah, out of all the people, my dad would usually go against that. But he goes, okay, what do you want? I go, Dad, it's a cable, it's like cable program. He's looking at the door. I went, right? But he goes, no, my mom comes out and blows it. Hold it. No, don't get it. So-and-so has it. What the fuck? The guy runs around the street, sells it to my friends. Guess who the dude is? Greg Kinnear.
No way.
Swear to God in my life. I go, that guy, I see him. Then I see him years later. Wait. So somehow... he's selling door-to-door cable, and I meet him. We're at the station. He's doing this thing about a new movie, and I went, Greg Kinnear. I went, he was selling cable, Cox cable. And he looked at me like this. I went, he was going door-to-door. Is he from Tucson? He goes, I am from Tucson, and I do sell Cox cable. I went, what a coincidence. We just meet. Yeah, and he was like looking at me like this. I was like going, you sold? He goes, I sold Cox cable. I go, yeah, what a weird coincidence. So I go, whoa, that guy is in my neighborhood from Tucson. I go, then I can make it like in a weird, strange way.
Yeah.
But I saw him on Talk Soup.
Years later. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, this guy looks familiar. He looks like somebody. It was him. So I went.
Let it be known here, Fleece Army, that Greg Kinnear is a hustler. He is unstoppable. That dude, he'll sell you cable. He'll tell you about what's going on in pop culture.
That's right.
He was in As Good As It Gets.
Okay. And then he was in with the one with, there was another one. Wait, what was it called? It was with Jack Nicholson. Wait, hold on for a minute.
Hey, that's As Good As It Gets.
Yeah, As Good As It Gets. Okay, yeah. My friend was working on a movie with him.
Yeah.
And, my friend goes, hey, guess who I'm working with this week? And my friend does craft service. We're doing craft service. And every single movie, he would tell me, you have Greg Kinnear's on this one. You got to come check him out. And I didn't want to go to the after party, but we hung out. My friend goes, he's kind of a geek. I go, geek, dude. It's Jack Nicholson. He got nominated for an Emmy or Oscar. And that's
he got an Oscar, yeah.
And then he did some other great movies, and I think he just took his money and we're waiting around.
Greg Kinnear. I remember when I got cable for the first time. I remember we didn't have it. First, I remember when I was really young, we had Super TV. I don't know if you remember Super TV.
Oh, man.
That was like the predecessor to cable. We had it for just a moment. And then it wasn't until I was in sixth grade that I remember cable finally came to Germantown, Maryland. It came to my neighborhood. And I remember I begged my parents to let me stay home the day that it was being installed. And I remember the guy showing up. It was Cable TV Montgomery. Oh. That was the company, Cable TV Montgomery. And I remember the guy showed up and I like watched him like hook it up and then drill the hole and then put the box in. And then he left. And then I immediately put on MTV and Comedy Central. And then I stayed home so many sick days that school year so I could watch Comedy Central. Whose Line Is It Anyway? They used to have premium.
Really?
You remember that? It was like premium blend and all the great. It was back when they used to show stand up on Comedy Central and back when they used to show music videos on MTV.
So this is okay. So I got it when I was okay. So I got it when I was six. My neighbors got it and I'll go over there and check it out. I got it when I was 17, 16. So how old were you when you got it?
Sixth grade, 12 or 13, maybe. I don't know.
What year? Like a 95?
Well, I'm only 15 years old right now.
Okay. I was figuring. I have
Benjamin Button disease. I am aging.
Benjamin Button disease.
Also, I've just did a lot of fentanyl and this is what a 15 year old on fentanyl looks like. I think I was like 12 years old and I remember, I remember the first time I actually got to watch MTV and you want to talk about it. I remember this video being at my grandmother's house because she had cable and I remember seeing this video and like I said, being blown away by the graphics of Money for Nothing.
It's incredible how they did that. And I think how many other videos did you do after that, which is that one? Because I never saw anything after that.
Well, I would assume that every hit off this record they did a music video for. Like, I mean, you might want to double check that, Adam, but I'm pretty sure. Here, let's find out a little bit about the background of this record. All right, so this is
the produced, highly cost a lot of money. It was like the biggest computer generated thing that just came out of nowhere. And they said Dire Straits. And it was recorded beautifully. I know that. And I saw it just on. If you go live, what's it called? With the one with, what's his name? The guy from Queen. They go back and they show that Live Aid thing, right?
Yeah.
You go back a few bands back, like in that rut on that lineup, they show Dire Straits and they show Sting walk up and he starts singing, I Want My MTV. I went, wow. I go, wow, MTV should be, is in a song? I didn't know they put MTV in a song. I didn't know, which big it was.
So obviously this is, in my opinion, the most iconic song on the record. The three things that I noticed, which you've mentioned a couple of them, but I want to talk about. All right.
Sure.
So first, I had no idea that was Sting until the third listen on this go round. I was like, I feel like that sounds like Sting. And then I checked and I was like, holy shit, it's Sting. So Sting's background vocals on this track, providing both the signature falsetto intro and the backing chorus of I Want My MTV, which I think if I'm not mistaken, he did that kind of to kind of match Don't Stand So Close to Me, because it almost is the same kind of like phonetic, like.
He was very popular with that kind of, the Police did. Was he going? He wasn't solo at the time. Sting was he?
In 85, no, they were still
Ghost and Machine.
I'm pretty sure the Police were still together. I'd check on that for me though, Adam. So Sting would go to Montserrat to windsurf, went to the studio for dinner, loved the song, and was invited to add something to it. He performed this song with them, like you said, at Live Aid in 1985.
Yeah, but I will tell you this, man, when they put out that video, right? Okay, then Weird Al Yankovic came up, followed up with it with the Beverly Hillbillies, right?
Yeah, from UHF.
And yeah, UHF, great. Yeah, that's where Michael Richards and all those guys were kind of like discovered. He's in that thing.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Great, good. Dude, the Rambo, it was really good shit. It was like the Kentucky Fried Chicken movie with sketches in it. That was a great concept, watching it. And I remember he did the Beverly Hillbillies. I go, hey, this guy has the money to put out like that kind of that computer generation shit. Like, off. Yeah, he did a good job of it, I think. And a lot of other people were using it too. I was working for a video game vendor as well, and they had Qbert and all these other ones trying to make it similar. But
how many jobs did you have? You're selling katanas. You're selling video game stuff.
Yeah, I was started in eighth grade doing. I was an acting troupe traveled, saving my money through the summers for that, and then got out of that. Went right into video game vending with this guy, Action Vending up in Tucson. Great dude. And then working on video games, and then started selling marijuana and martial art equipment for a while, and then. It was a dream come true because I was selling for my teacher in high school, my history teacher. It's kind of strange.
Yeah.
And I walking down the street one day, and I go, Mr. Martin, Mr. So-and-so. And he goes, call me Rich. I went, what? And he's raking his yard, and he was from Boston, and he was all into his stuff. He was a really great guy, but we used to jam out a lot of jams at his tunes, but Dire Straits came in the summertime. That's when it was like the mellow. That was a great summer, to tell you the truth.
I mean, you're probably cleaning up, dude. You're selling fucking 20 bags of dope and some nunchucks.
It was good dope. It was good. Red hair right in there. And I wouldn't smoke it during school because I did one time. And I almost, it was a nightmare in the morning. But afterwards, I do a little mm-mm. But then I started selling it, making a good profit. And next thing you know, it got out of hand. I went to his house, and he had everybody at each school. And he was like looking at me going, Pablo, you're talented. But he caught me cheating on a test, and he busted me right there. I was like, dude, we're partners. And he's like, no, got to go to the office. So make a long story short, good bud, really good shit, good stuff. And it was bigger than usual. I didn't know how to weigh too well, so I'm like, whatever.
You just eyeballed it.
Yeah, I bought it. I took 20% of each thing, money, put it aside. And then
I was the only drugs that I ever dealt. I dealt pot for like a short period of time so I could get a free eighth. I probably did that for like 3 months. And then you sell the majority of it, and with the profit, I can keep an eighth.
Telling me with your course, it's that easy?
Do you not want to pay for weed anymore? Here's what you do. Find your next door neighbor's son and convince him to give you an ounce for free, and then you'll pay him back. And when you pay him back, make sure you keep a little bit of bud for yourself. No profit other than getting high.
That's right, Michael. And let me tell you something. It's that easy. Okay, with that, David, tell him all. You get the bud, you get the bag, and get what? You got a free joint too, and a dispensary down the street. Went to a dispensary down the street. It used to be an old apartment complex. Come on, I go, dispensary. Come on. We go up the steps, and I swear to God, there's a St. Bernard shit. Looks like fucking Dairy Queen. I go, look, we follow the trail of shit. We go all the way up there, knock on the door, and there's a security guard like this, and his eyes are blazing.
What's up, man?
I went, look, he's high too. Medication. We go in there, and my friend still complains. I get a bag of weed, then they give you a joint for free. And look, he opens it up. He goes, look, just saw this in here. I went, what kind of dispensary is this? They got better and better, I guess. But watching them, they were doing the same pot deals they do on the street there. Would you like some purple haze, perhaps?
Yeah.
And I'm a doctor, and would you like this? And I said, I want my MTV. Then we go right back into the Dire Straits.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we were talking about something about Adam was looking for some facts on it about something, right? And then we,
Adam, you have anything for
us?
So
there was four videos done for this album, which was a big track. So Far Away, Money for Nothing, Walk of Life, and Brothers.
I knew it.
Walk of Life. Why didn't I think about that? I think they blew so much money on that character generator stuff, whatever they had to put together with that computer stuff, graphics, that...
I don't think the other videos have as high tech of technology. Yeah. So this is released in 1985 and has been described as a pop rock album. It was recorded on the Caribbean island Montserrat. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Although some follow-up sessions were needed in a New York studio after a defective batch of tape affected all or parts of three tracks. And this was one of the first albums recorded on a Sony 24-track digital tape machine due to singer and lead guitarist Mark Knopfler's constant desire to have better sound quality. It spent 9 weeks at the top spot on the Billboard 200 and was certified 9 times platinum in the U.S. And this platinum is crazy. This is one of the most profitable records of all time. This sold more than 30 million copies worldwide.
With the single or the...
The full album. This is a big record, dude. It won the Grammy for Best Engineered Album Non-Classical in 1986, but it lost Album of the Year to Phil Collins' No Jacket Required. Adam, pull up the track list for No Jacket Required for me, because I want to find out I want to know who else was nominated too.
Yeah, because Phil Collins was on a roll back in there. I mean, he was coming out with hit after hit.
Yeah, he could do no wrong.
Yeah, but Dire Straits went from 85. Okay. All right.
Dude, this is a huge... Dude, Pablo, this is a huge record, dude.
Well, I didn't know it sold 30 million. That's outrageous. That's insane.
30 million record. Now, that's worldwide, but 9 times platinum in the United States means it sold at least 9 million copies. If I'm not mistaken, is that...
So platinum record nine, go... I'm sorry.
Platinum, I think, is... fuck, I hope... 10, you got to check all this shit, too, Adam. I think platinum means a million records sold. And so 9 times would be 9 million. The 20th anniversary edition also won in 2006 for Best Surround Sound Record. Brothers in Arms was the first album to sell 1 million copies in the CD format and to outsell its LP version. So that's a little background of
that's good
behind this.
All right,
I have Brothers in Arms on DVD, no CD somewhere.
I've got
I
got three things ready for you here. So first of all certifications, it's 500,000 for gold, 1 million for platinum, 2 million for multi-platinum, and 10 million for diamond for this certification.
Wait, 20 million you said for diamond?
10 million.
No, 10 million. So this was 1 million short of diamond.
Okay, is this the first year or are we talking
keep this in mind, man. Keep this in mind that this is before streaming. This is before really singles really got even bigger and bigger, if I'm not mistaken. So you had to buy the record. And if you're going to buy this album for money for nothing, you're going to also want to get the other tracks on it because they started coming out. There's like 5 singles on this.
Wow. You had to buy the album or a cassette. Either that's it. Then the CD came out.
All right, Adam, what else you got?
So we got Album of the Year. It lost to No Jacket Required by Phil Collins. We'll go through that in a second. The other albums that were nominated were Whitney Houston's self-titled album.
Wow.
Sting's The Dream of the Blue Turtles.
Okay, that's okay. Okay, go. Yeah.
And then, that just sounds terrible.
And then the last one was USA for Africa, We Are the World.
What else was on there besides We Are the World?
Let's find out.
We are the world.
Yeah. We are the world. Universe.
Oh, yeah. We're changing.
We Are the World. Then you have Steve Perry's If Only for the Moment, Girl. Then you have the Pointer Sisters. Bruce Springsteen's on there. Prince and the Revolutions for the Tears in Your Eyes. Chicago's on there. Tina Turner. So it's got Kenny Rogers, Huey Lewis, and the News. So it's got the heavy hitters on that album.
Okay. And then now what's on the Phil Collins record?
Phil Collins, No Jacket Required track list is 11 tracks. Susudio, Only You Know and I Know, Long, Long Way to Go, I Don't Want to Know, One More Night, Don't Lose My Number, Who Said I Would.
You're done. Really? It won. It deserved
that's
it.
On, that's
it
on No Jacket Required?
It. That's on No Jacket Holy Required. Yeah.
It deserved everything it won because everything you just mentioned is fire. So, all right, let's okay, no. But what else you got?
Look, Genesis came out. I wasn't too fan of a Genesis kind of thing, right? But then when Phil Collins came out, I had no idea back then he was involved with Genesis. He comes out with this. But Dire Straits, got to tell you, if it comes down to a good summer, I would say, I'm going to have to say most definitely Brothers in Arms because that was the baddest.
Totally different record. Totally different record. But I think that's what you have to give it to Phil Collins compared to this. I think that Phil Collins record is just straight hit after hit. Right. But let's talk about the music that's on this record. So it opens with So Far Away. I did know this one. This was the lead single from the record. Let's see. It reached number 3 on the Hot Adult Contemporary charts. Hot Adult. Peaking at number 19 on the Billboard 100. This is the band's third straight top 20 hit off the record in the States. And Mark Knopfler told the BBC, So Far Away is something I would want to apply to anybody. Quite apart from anything else, we are now a world of travelers and air travelers. Families are split up in different parts all over the place, and it has relevance. He also added, it was about conducting a relationship over a telephone, which is a joke. It can't really be done over a long period of time because you both get exhausted with it. This was the basic idea. I like this song a lot, man. This one is
jam.
I mean, definitely the jam. But I mean, Money for Nothing. Like we mentioned the Sting thing. So, and you also mentioned, cause this is the thing about Money for Nothing that like blew me away was I was listening to it and I do the listen with my headphones on.
That's what I do too. That's what I was going to mention. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then you hear him drop the F bomb and I am like, have I just been missing that?
Yeah. They did edit that out, didn't they?
MTV? Dude, what got me talking about at you about the Comedy Cellar, I was talking about the podcast and I said to the guys, I go, do you guys realize that in Money for Nothing, they say the F word like 4 times? And they were like, they don't cut it out. Like it's still, I don't know about now in 2021, but definitely in 85 up until probably only a few years ago.
Then they choke it.
Dude, because I would have noticed if it suddenly went dark. This is a song that comes on. Here, first of all, we got to talk about it before we get back to the F-bomb. Just play the intro, the guitar riff to this.
Intro jam, isn't it?
Badass. So the reason the guitar is so dope is because Knopfler modeled his guitar sound for this song on ZZ Top guitarist Billy Gibbons, who was a past guest of this podcast. That literally, this literally sounds exactly. He came on to talk Eliminator. This literally sounds exactly like something off of that record. And Gibbons told Timothy White, a musician, in late 1985 that Knopfler had solicited Gibbons' help in replicating the tone, adding he didn't do a half bad job either, considering that I never told him a goddamn thing. That sounds like something Billy would say.
So basically, those guys, I know Billy Gibbons has their own sound, just like Joe Satriani does, and so does Eddie Van Halen. They all got their own sound. So that sound, that Eliminator, what Billy Gibbons kind of like, is that legal to do? No, they're buddies. They can do what they want to do.
They want to do. I mean, you can't listen. You can take a sound. It's not like you took a goddamn riff. He took a sound.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly for this song. That is arguably one of the most iconic opening guitar riffs. And then you go put it with the video and the dude floating into the screen. And then you suddenly see the band and they're all wearing neon shit. Like they work at an Outback Steakhouse in 1994. Like it's the same colors.
Yeah.
The same colors as the Outback Steakhouse outfit I used to have to wear when I was busboy and employee of the month.
Look at that busboy. That's the way you do it.
You pick the dishes up and pre-bust the table. You bring the bread. That's the way you do it. Bloomin' onions and the sauce is free.
So to really, we have to talk about the reason that they say this F word. They say this word. It's because Knopfler wrote this about the perspective of the song. Just so everybody knows, if you're listening to this and you never caught that word, this is what Knopfler said about the track. He said, the lead character in Money for Nothing is a guy who works in a hardware department in a television custom kitchen, refrigerator, microwave, appliance store. He's singing the song. I wrote the song when I was actually in the store. I borrowed a bit of paper and started to write the song down in the store. I wanted to use a lot of the language that the real guy actually used when I heard him because it was more real. Dude, we have to boycott the store.
No,
we have to boycott. Can you find out what the store was, Adam? Because if was it a Best Buy?
I think I know what it was. Hold on.
Dude, if you went into a Best Buy.
No, not the Best Buy.
And the guys, like, they're like, yeah, so this is the new UHD 8K television. YouTube, and they got a music video on. He goes, look at that F word.
Okay, microwave. Look at that. Microwave.
You know, he's got his earring. Right? Yeah, he's got his earring. You'd be like, excuse me. I just wanted to buy a mount for my LG. And they're just like, circuit? this fucking flub. And they're just, I mean, it is. But this is like a different time, dude.
It was. But I totally understand what he's saying because I went to those. Oh, yeah, that's so funny.
For sure. But this is like, dude, you cannot say that word now. You just can't. And you can't do it in a song that's going to be a number one hit. Dude, I mean, the fact that like Eminem got away with it in the early 2000s, like that's, I mean, that was different times, man. But dude, think about 1985. Like, I just want to talk about 1985 for a second because, you know, one of the movies that came out in 1984 is the movie Revenge of the Nerds, right? And I love that movie.
Filmed in Tucson. Yeah, I remember.
Was it really filmed in Tucson?
Filmed in Tucson. And during that scene, they're at the University of Arizona, and they're going past all the guys like this, right? These bodyguard looking dudes. And in one of the scenes, there was a dude that lived down my street who was selling a lot of dope at the time, and he went over there to be in the movie, and then he got killed, shot over this cocaine deal. We were all going, and he's a university guy. Going, hey, this guy just got killed, but friends of the nerds here. Now Pablo takes you back to Revenge of the Nerds, where he shows a cocaine dealer, a friend of his, gets killed, and whatever. Yeah. Anyhow, yes, Revenge of the Nerds, and what else?
Well, I wanted to, this is what I'm just saying about how we can get, how it's so different than where we're at now. Revenge of the Nerds was one of the most popular movies of 1984.
Huge.
And in it, if you guys remember, they sexually like harass and assault like a whole sorority's worth of girls. They steal their panties. They videotape them while they're showering. Then the lead character it's rape. I mean, he puts on the helmet that her boyfriend was wearing, and then he fools her into having sex with him, thinking that it's her boyfriend. I mean, that's rape.
And we loved that
movie, and we loved it. So,
wow,
what was going down in the 80s, man?
How many people put the helmet on in real life? You know,
I mean, listen, it just shows you just how like
weird.
Listen,
I'm supposed to be. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that scene was in there. Where are they?
Oh, yeah, dude. Rewatch
you.
It's like, ha ha, you just had sex with me and I wasn't the person that you said you thought you were having sex with. It's crazy, dude. It's just different times.
You like that? Yeah, David. I was like, no, it's Harvey. How you doing?
Different times. Let me see if I found some stuff about the controversy behind this. So the lyrics have been criticized for being homophobic. And in a 1985 interview in Rolling Stone magazine, Knopfler expressed mixed feelings on the controversy. He said, I got an objection from the editor of a gay newspaper in London. He actually said it was below the belt. Apart from the fact that there are stupid gay people as well as stupid other people, it suggests that maybe you can't let it have so many meanings. You have to be direct. In fact, I'm still in two minds as to whether it's a good idea to write songs that aren't in the first person to take on the other characters. the singer in Money for Nothing is a real ignoramus, hard hat mentality, somebody who sees everything in financial terms. I mean, this guy has a grudging respect for rock stars. He sees it in terms of, well, that's not working, yet the guy's rich. That's a good scam. He isn't sneering.
Can I say something real quick? Didn't he say below the belt?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who the gay reporter said is below the belt?
The gay reporter did say it's below the belly.
Yeah. Is it the stomach or below the belly button?
Below the belly button, I'm assuming. Oh.
Okay. So anyway.
He has, for the band's 1985 concert that was televised in the UK, Knopfler replaced the F word with Queenie.
Really?
I don't know. What do you think, Adam?
Queenie? Look at these Queenies. That's the way you do it.
I mean, it's probably a little more gentle than the F word. Still not great, but you're...
Well, if you really slow down, is he really, you lip sync, is that computer guy really saying faggot? Like, is he like, you see like the thing going, look at him, fag. Like you see the, this little white thing going, fags, look at, is he saying fag or maybe queen?
Man.
I don't know.
In 2000, January 2011, the Canadian Broadcast Standards Council ruled that the unedited version of the song was unacceptable for airplay on private Canadian radio stations as it breached the Canadian Association of Broadcasters Code of Ethics and their Equitable Portrayal Code. The CBSC concluded that, like other racially driven words in the English language, the F word is one of them. Even if it entirely or marginally acceptable in earlier days, it is no longer so. But a lot of radio stations did not abide to this, at least two stations, and they played the unedited version repeatedly for an hour out of protest.
Hmm.
Wow.
Interesting. You know, is there more to it too?
I mean, there is, but it's all basically saying the same stuff.
Okay, now a friend of mine, Ashley Thiesman, he's a comedian that I toured with, and he was a guy from Haiti, and I would jam out some of my tunes. I was like 15 years older than him, right? And he goes, "Have you seen this video yet?" The song of the computer guy. He goes, "Listen to these faggots. That's the way they do." He starts laughing. Going, "These guys are putting down rock stars." Then I go, "Yeah." Then he's talking about how much money he got. All kind of things. It was so funny watching that generation of him, and Billy Idol was, I think he had Flesh for Fantasy somewhere in that area, right? And it's so funny watching the videos, because he never saw the videos of the Dire Straits. And he goes, "Who are these guys?" I go, "Oh, dude, check it." But he would watch that. He goes, "These guys, playing on the drum like a chimpanzee. Ah, that ain't working." That is so hilarious, because I had no idea at the time that he was putting down the I see the videos and I was going, "Okay, what do you mean by working?" Back then, I did my thing, but I now realize I was going, "Oh, these guys are," they're going, "Look at these guys, and they're taking all the, we got to be doing that. This guy's singing about what?" And they show the guy, it's like a George Michaels kind of mimic, because all the videos you see that he's looking at are just like generic ones they put up in those square TVs. You see that, you see a guy third floor, fifth floor, this show guy looks like George Michael dancing around, pointing his finger, and you're going, "Oh my God, this is hilarious." And they were pointing the finger. They made like a George Michael-esque kind of guy in the video. If you watch the video that this guy, these movers are watching, look at that. And you see this guy come down, he spins, they put the little beard on him kind of thing. It was funny how they were making fun of George Michael's and the other videos by making other videos to make it look like that video. Does that make sense?
So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so I was like, wow. It does say a lot about a lot of things in that video.
I mean, different times, I get it. The video's great. It's just so funny that they're playing that video. It's getting so much airplay in 1985, and it's just like, "You're an F-word, F-word, gang, 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 gang. You're an F-word."
Yeah. You suck ding dong and whatever kind of thing. Well, that kind of like, I was like, wow, faggot. That is kind of a heavy hit, too.
Very, 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 very big.
Look at these faggots.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so I can see why. But then again, I go, if you're gay and you think faggot, they're talking about you, then what kind of, I wouldn't associate faggot with if I was gay, right? I would just go, "Hey, those guys are talking about other guys."
For sure. You're grown up a certain way, it's like people change, history is progressive, but it's just like people use words.
Right.
Yeah, people, you use words that, it's just okay. You've been saying them your whole life, and then it's suddenly like, oh no, we can't say it. But it's like, no, I never meant it like that. But it doesn't make a difference. It's just the guy like society. Wrote that.
Okay,
for sure, for sure. All right, let's move on to let's talk about Walk of Life, because there's only a few tracks on this album I really want to talk about. Walk of Life, we have to mention. This track peaked at number 7 on the U.S. charts, tied for the biggest commercial hit in the U.K., peaking at number 2. And this song was nearly excluded from the record when the co-producer Neil Dorfman voted against its inclusion, but the rest of the band outvoted him. Hmm. Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting.
Well, hey, friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolfpack, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
You know, who's the producer of that album? Is it, can you find out who jumped on the board with those guys?
And Mark Knopfler wrote this song to celebrate the street buskers of London, hence the references to Bebopalula and What I Say, two standards that might be part of a singer's repertoire in the mid-80s. Right. For the music video, because we got to talk about music videos, it was U.S. sports bloopers mixed with live performance footage. Pull up the video for this while we move on. Knopfler didn't want any shots of him in front of the side to avoid full effect of his nose. Oh, he must have a fucking honker.
Well, who that guy?
Yeah, dude. He must have a biggie. He must have a huge nose. If that's like, he must have like a nose said. Like, well, I mean, that's we got to see the video to make sure. Walk of Life is great. So far, you've got your 3 biggest songs on here: So Far Away, Money for Nothing, and Walk of Life to open it. Do you have any thoughts on Walk of Life? Do you want to hear it, or is there anything? Yeah,
absolutely. The thing is that, look, I was very, very heavy metalish, right? I would dab into these Dire Straits guys, whatever the first songs they came out with. I didn't know they did that. The Satans of what's it called?
Sultans of Swing.
Thank you. And that song, and it was a good, I listen to that song now, I go, man, those guys were on it back then. I mean, I was like 4th grade, and those guys were just, they knew how to write music, and they know how to express themselves really well. Great musicians. And then to come out in the MTV generation going, you got to do it. Who knows, the Stones probably said, you got to make videos, mate, because you know what? This era, man, the kids are buying it. And guess what? They bought it. Those guys sold albums more. They had probably money already set for them. And the Stones did it with, you know, Start Me Up and Pat Benatar. They're already making money back then. And when that video era came out, boom, you know? So
yeah,
they did a smart way of engineering that stuff, put a lot of money in that video, and look what happened. Bam.
Yeah. Adam, you got the music video?
Like, this is actually, whoa, I forgot.
And you're like, God, dude.
Oh, wait, it's great.
That looks so weird in the 80s.
Oh,
there you go.
Whoa, good save. Oh, wait. Oh, this is awesome. It is addicting though, to watch, right?
Oh, yeah.
Adam, what do you think?
I mean, everybody loves a good sports blooper. I mean,
everyone loves a fucking whatever, good save and good hikes and fumbles and shit. It's a good idea. I think we should do.
Song's way better than the music video, though. All right. Your latest trick. That's a good song. I want to talk about before we get, because this whole second half, man, is just. All right. So you have the three biggest hits, first half of the record, and the album opens with Ride Across the River for side two. This might be one of my favorite songs on the record. This is what's funny. This is the second song from Dire Straits' Brother in Arms album to appear in Miami Vice. And after I found that out and re-listened to this song, I realized this is the perfect song. Perfect song for a Miami Vice episode. It's played 27 seconds in. See Crockett and Tubbs overlooking a cocaine bust hall with this playing in the background, like, man.
Yeah, man, we got him this time. They're after us. Boink.
That Miami night. Hot.
Yeah. I can feel it. And then that song.
yeah.
You can put Walk of Life on that. Fucking, hey, man, we got to wait.
We got to walk off life.
You can't end an episode with Walk of Life. You can't.
Hey, man, we did it, man. Come on. Tony, we did it, man.
Love the pan flute in it. Anytime you use pan flute, this is a concept of Latin American guerrilla wars in Honduras and Nicaragua in the mid-80s. Great song. And then the rest of the album, in my opinion, kind of falls apart until we get to the final track, which is Brother in Arms. The title track on the record, this song was inspired by the Falklands War, which was going on when Dire Straits lead singer Mark Knopfler wrote the song. Knopfler sings about a soldier who is dying on the battlefield surrounded by his comrades who remain by his side as he slips away. It's a look at the folly of war and the plight of those who fight them. The title is something Knopfler's dad said in discussing the Falklands War. He described the Russians and Argentinians as brothers in arms, meaning they had similar ideologies. And that phrase ended up being used for the title of this record. Something I found to be really cool, Pablo, that I didn't even realize is Adam told me that Metallica covered this in 2007 at Neil Young's Bridge School benefit concert. You want to play it for us, Ad?
There's so many different worlds, so many different suns, and we have just been lost.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's a great song, man. It's a really great song. I mean, the fact that Metallica can cover it and basically turn it into one of their songs, I mean, it's a great song. Yeah, it's perfect way to end the album. Yeah, man. I mean, it's not my favorite album I've done on this, but those first three songs and this one, I mean, yeah, dude, they're iconic.
Well, that's great that you even, you know, you look, it's like taking a needle and putting it in a basketball. You went deeper into that. You know, that's what I like about this. Now I'm thinking to myself, going, you know what? Yes, I was listening to this music, but then, you know, I get your thing going. What songs are going to be? Dire Straits, all right, let's go there. And it's like, I really listened to the riffs from back then. I go, these guys, what's fantastic about it is that you look back and you go, man, these guys were already, you know, when I was born, you know, I'm thinking, do you guys get in 69 positions? You guys, like, have sex? Old guy at 7-Eleven making slurpees goes, oh, dude, all the time, right? And then I listen to these guys now, and I go, holy shit, these guys are basically, you know, when the youth grows up and they start realizing, holy smoke, you know, like right now, the girl that works for me, you know, and we call her, you know, my squeeze in a lot of sense, is that her daughter just moved out of here. She is 20 years old. And she goes, what's my favorite song, right? And she goes, the guy's from Pink Floyd. Well, we don't teach or leave those kids alone, right? I go, I heard that in fifth grade. And then she goes into, right, So Far Away From Me. She doesn't know the name of the song, right? But it's recorded in digital. So nowadays, my parents were in black and white. Now, today's parents are in color. So I go, do you realize what you're seeing here, what you're hearing? I was listening to that song when I was your age 5 years ago, basically. I go, I was jamming to that. Doing bongs, you know, without the tobacco, whatever crap they use now. I said, that was the shit. That was the stuff, you know, and She's like, really? Well, yeah, you're listening to our music right now. A lot of these, you know, kids back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Who are awesome, to tell you the truth. But yeah, they're jamming out to our tunes. And that's a great tune. I mean, that's a great summer.
Like I said, first three are dope. Last track is dope. A lot of filler on this album. A lot of filler. But the shit that's killer is killer. All right, let's do some random facts and get out of here, okay? They were Princess Diana's favorite rock group, which made me laugh so much.
Really?
Yeah, dude. Like, she went to go see him live a couple times. Can you just imagine her? It's like, you know.
Hi, Princess Diana. You want to have sex with me?
Yeah. Play Brother in Arms. Play it.
He's a hottie, though.
I hope they play Brother in Arms.
I hope they play Brothers in Arms. Right. You know, they probably picked her out of the audience. Come here, you. Put her back there.
Can we get her backstage?
Who's this girl back here? Oh, you. Yeah, he's...
Who's this dumb boy that you're with? Oh, he's like, I'm Prince Charles. They took the name Diana.
They
took the name Dire Straits because it represented their financial condition in the early days.
Dire Straits. Wait. Does that mean Dire Straits? I don't know what that means. Dire means, okay. What is that? What is the definition? Is that a noun, pronoun? Who gives a shit right on that? But dire straits mean that the word struggling. Is that what it means?
Yeah, it means you're up Schitt's Creek, basically.
Dude, man, I'm on dire straits, man.
Yeah, dude.
I hook her down the street, man. She charged me full price. Dire straits. But
so this was among 10 albums nominated for Best British Album of the last 30 years in 2010 by the Brit Awards, but they lost to Oasis. What's the story, Morning Glory?
That's Oasis. Once again,
Oasis, dude. Oasis is loved by the British people. They are, loved by Brits. Them, the Stone Roses, and the Beatles, and Arctic Monkeys now are just
Arctic
like British
Monkeys.
People.
Oh yeah, okay. Arctic, let's give them a round of applause. No,
nice. Yeah. And this album dropped down to 418 on the 2020 list. It's the band's only appearance on either list.
Well, I'm going to say this. The Arctic Monkeys, I got to tell you, this guy came over my house, right? And he was playing their music. And every song was it was good. It was really good quality stuff, I would have to say. So, yes, to put them against the Dire Straits, or, you know, it's kind of like, okay. That's a compliment, I guess, right? The Dire Straits American.
I think so too.
So yeah, it's a good go against Oasis, these quality bands that, and to bring up the Dire Straits.
Fact that this was among 10 albums nominated for Best British Album of the last 30 years. I mean, you know how many records come out in between that time? Like thousands. So this is an important record. I mean,
absolutely.
Like, it's a very important record. I think it has to do a lot with the music video. I think the fact that, you know, that was such a big, big hit for them. And the three songs, like I said, that are on here, they're incredible. So
yeah, man. That is absolutely, you know what? You did your research right, because I didn't know that. Now I'm like, you know what? Yeah. When you're going up against today's, they bring out that album from Dire Straits. That's wow. I didn't know that. So, hey, there you go, man. That's fantastic. I didn't know that. I had no idea.
All right. Let's do some rapid questions and get you out of here. Okay. Favorite song on the record?
Oh, So Far Away. I wouldn't say that. Right. Depends what mode. This is a mood kind of album. So, look. Did you know Till? Okay. This is what I like about it. Look, when you're on a boat with Uncle Juan, get ready to go to the University of, you know, USIU and film school. He plays Walk of Life and So Far Away from Me on the boat, right? Because by now financial aid's going down shit with me at the time. So he plays that. Then I sit with my headphones on, my Sonys. I bought at the Price Club.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing you did. You hear all the great engineering perfectly. And it stands up today's music up. Absolutely. And it'll grab today's youth like that. So yes.
Yeah. All right. Least favorite song on this record.
I would have to say, okay, the one you played, to tell you the truth, man, I want, was it So Far Away From Me? Was first, which song was first? It was
So Far Away, then Money for Nothing.
Those two songs. I didn't, after that, I didn't get past that. My disrespect. Okay. You're right. I didn't get past that because I was like going, that's all I needed, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. All right. You know? What song on this record would you fuck to?
Sheesh. I would say this. No, man. That would be like, I would say the appetizer, I guess, to that. In this little town. Wait. You're so far away from me. Goop. It's over. That's me. I don't last that long back then.
But yeah, I get it. Dude, this was great, brother. I appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much. Is there anything you want to promote?
I'm going to be up. Check me out. I'm going to be up. We're setting our dates here. We're going to be in Washington, D.C., right? Near your town. And I want to say to Chris Mazzilli out there. Saw your Corvette show. Awesome. Up at Gotham. And, of course, the Cellar. Way to go. Taking it down to Las Vegas. Dustin Wybara, my friend, just played the Cellar.
Nice.
All this week. And, and you, my friend, thanks for fucking having me on your show.
Great, my pleasure, Adam, brother.
Right to you guys. And we'll rock and roll.
Yeah, buddy. Thank you so much, bud.
Hey, man, take care of yourself, my friend.
All right, buddy.
Mentos.
What did I tell you? The one and only Pablo Francisco. Follow him on Twitter at Pablo_Francisco. And for all things Pablo, go to PabloFrancisco.com. For listener shout out this week, I want to give a huge shout out to JY. His handle on Instagram is JY0880. He sent me a message that I needed to read. He's been following along with his buddies, and he has been, he's going to finish. He's going to be with us till the very, very end. Not the very, very end, the very, very end. I love you, Jay. Thank you for being in the Fleece Army. You are now officially a general in the Fleece Army. Attorney General? Just a general. So if you guys want to get shout out, send me messages and tell me that you're listening to the podcast and make me feel good. Make me feel good. All right. So we listened to Dire Straits from 1985 for new music pick this week. It's Australian rock band Holy Holy. Their 2017 album hit the top 10 of the Australian album charts in 2018. They were included in Triple J's top 100, and they're definitely kindred spirits at Dire Straits. And you are listening to Believe Anything off their brand new album Hello My Beautiful World. You can find links to the music on our website, the500podcast.com. and if you're in a band and you want your music featured on the 500 because you were influenced by one of these albums, send us your song to 500podcast@gmail.com and put the album and artist that influenced you in the subject line. Oh shit. Next week, it's Neil Young week. Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Aurora Borealis. 1979's Russ Never Sleeps. Get into that shit. Do your homework. Stay fleecy. Doogle doogle. Was right.
trip, keeping it fleecy for the Fleece Nation on the 500.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.
Next Chapter Podcasts.